Do you feel your community bank or credit union is losing the battle against the big banks? This episode of Training Matters might just be the David versus Goliath story you need to hear. Trent Fleming reveals some excellent ideas on how to convince your customers to choose your bank or credit union over a big name competitor. I'm your host, Honey Shelton. Thank you for joining me for another insightful episode of Training Matters.
Training Matters is brought to you by the Training Institute, dedicated to setting the standard for individuals responsible for training effectiveness in banks and credit unions across the country.
Today, we're going to talk about something that matters greatly to those of you that train people to be successful at your company, as well as those of you that are really committed to seeing what you can do to grow and expand the relationship of your depositor, or your borrower, your customer, your member, whatever you call them. Trent and I saw each other just last week in Nebraska, where we were both speaking to the Nebraska bankers in their marketing conference, and that was great fun to run into Trent. We've known each other. We've been road warriors together, and our paths have crossed. He's highly respected in the financial institution arena, and we share many clients. Welcome, Trent. Tell everybody about you.
Thank you, honey. Good morning. Good to be with you. My business, as you know, a lot of speaking and education in the banking industry. I work with a couple of the graduate schools of banking, as well as a number of the state banking associations. As you mentioned, we run across those. And my goal really is to help community banks and other financial institutions make good decisions about operations and technology matters from a strategic standpoint. My typical comment about how I work with my clients is that I become a trusted advisor, so that as they're looking at change, whether it's a new computer system, whether it's a new marketing program, whether it's looking at new branch opportunities in new markets, that I become that trusted advisor that can help them and guide them as they look to make, again, good decisions about how they move forward, how they execute on their strategies.
Well, excellent. I see how we have so many things in common, and I think what you do and I do really shows our passion, enthusiasm, and expertise. What you certainly come at this from is your experience. I know you started out as a correspondent banker and then moved into the consulting arena. Today, what I would like to hone in on that you have a incredibly respected reputation about is packaging and promoting small business services. I'd really like first off to kind of hear why small businesses are so important to community banks and possibly even the credit union world today.
Sure. I think, honey, there are really, in my mind, three primary reasons why we need to be focused on small businesses. Number one, they are a good source of low-cost deposits. And some of you will say today everyone is a good source of low-cost deposits. Historically, that has been the case, predictable low-cost deposits, and that's important to us as we build a base from which we can lend. Secondly, a typical small business is willing to pay fees when you can demonstrate value. And for the most part, that's not true of our consumers. So we need that customer base of small businesses so that we can provide fee-based services to them that they are willing to pay for, that benefit them, and also allow us to generate fees apart from net interest margin. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, because many of your small businesses tend to be privately or closely held, they are going to give you access to private wealth management opportunities through what we call family money, and also to other business relationships that that family may be involved in, where there are more opportunities for you to do business with profitable small businesses. So those are the three reasons. That's the main effort I have in trying to help banks and other financial institutions understand how important it is to attract and retain and continue to do more business with these small businesses.
Well, I could certainly nod my head to everything that you said. Having been a community banker for many years myself, I know that, just like you said, not only do the small business type companies, not only are they sensitive about wanting to have a relationship with a bank, but oftentimes I think when we show them, and you called it value, but when we show them how interested we are in them, they consider us an important partner. I know I certainly feel that way about my banker. I think a question a lot of community banks have is, how do they compete and go up against the big box banks, the national banks, the regional banks for small business accounts?
Well, and that's a great question. It is a question that comes with a lot of misunderstanding. As I will tell you that I think that the misinformation that's being propagated in the marketplace today is that the larger banks can provide more services and do a better job of providing those services to small businesses than can the community banks. And that's absolutely not true, but it does appear to be the perception. It certainly is the marketing message that the large banks are trying to get out there. And so what we deal with is that the community banks are not at a disadvantage from a standpoint of having access to products and services that allow them to serve their small businesses. Where they are at a disadvantage is that they are not talking about them in an, if you will, an integrated way. And so that's the title of our talk this morning, and that's the title of the presentation that I do a number of times every year, packaging and promoting small business services, because we have to do both of those things. We have to understand what we have in terms of everything that we can offer, from ACH origination to online internet banking capabilities, mobile banking capabilities, the wire transfer and other sweep accounts, other types of things that we can have. And of course, there's a great number of them these days. So the small financial institution has access to many of those. But in many cases, they're just not talking about them in any kind of packaged fashion. So what we're asking the financial institutions, the smaller ones, to do is to put together bundles, if you will, of goods and services, products and services, that they believe small, medium, large, and for some of our smaller institutions, they're only going to have small and medium-sized businesses. That's fine. But we want to put together bundles and say to the businessman, based on the industry that you're in and the volume of transaction business that you do, we think this is the right bundle of products and services for you. That does two things. It makes sure that we're educating our customers about all of the products and services that we have. And it also says to the customer, you're important enough to us that we have sat down and looked at what we know about your operation, and we've put together what we think is the right mix of products and services to best serve your business. And so that's a great relationship tool. It's a handshaking tool, if you will, to get you in front of them, talk about their business. And the great thing about this is that when you go to someone, you say, here's what we think you need, they are going to start thinking along the lines, and sometimes then they will disagree with you, right? They'll say, well, no, maybe we need this, maybe we need that. But you've started the process of interaction so that you can end up delivering to them what it is that they are looking for. Most of our smaller financial institutions have not gone in that direction. And I met with some bankers not too long ago, and we were talking about what they perceived to be competition and what they were dealing with that was difficult. And one banker mentioned to me that a very large national global scope bank who had a significant presence in a metropolitan area not too far from them had been into their market, which was a college town. They'd been into their market, and they were promoting dental business services. So we have a dental lending specialist with a brochure and a calling officer with that specialist, and they're visiting dental offices to talk about expansion, to talk about adding a new dentist, to talk about selling that business and retiring and selling it off to a new dentist who wanted to come into that community. And as I talked to the small banker, he said, you know, the reality is, we've done all of those things. We've helped a new dentist get started in our community. We've helped an existing business, or existing dentist, expand his business in our community. And we've helped an existing dentist sell her practice to someone coming out of dental school and made that transition. We've done all of that. We just haven't called it dental business services. And so there's that packaging and promoting approach that I keep hammering on, because it's so important that we remind our customers and our prospects what it is that we do. It's not their job to maintain a current level of understanding about all the products and services their bank offers. It's the bank's job to continually remind and educate them about those services. Does that make sense, honey?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm sure you delve into this to some degree as well, but oftentimes how I'm in there helping is teaching people what to say it, how to probe, how to build rapport, how to engage a conversation to uncover needs and then be able to come back and do exactly what you're talking about and saying, what a good match we are. Let me tell you what we have, and I'd like to tell you about a few people that, as I've gotten to hear what you have to say today about your business, I wanted you to hear about a couple of businesses that we've helped. So I can see how we dovetail there to a great degree, because I think that people who work in a financial institution, whether they're a broker, a lender, a trust officer, a personal banker, a relationship manager, whatever we call them, if they're not well acquainted with the product and the conversation around the product, it's really hard to convey and communicate and compete against a national television ads at 6 o'clock and all over Google and everywhere else. Let me ask you this. What are some best practices you suggest that a bank can use to retain and tighten up existing small business relationships?
That's a good question, and it's the right approach. What are the best practices? What should we be doing? Because clearly, in many cases, what we're doing is not right. And you know, you touched on something with the television advertising, and really so much of advertising today has been relegated to live sporting events because the advertisers understand that people are recording their favorite shows and speed watching them and never seeing the commercials. But in a live sporting event, there's a better opportunity. So, for example, American Express Small Business Services, which I think is a great competitor, I mean that in a bad way, a very good competitor to our community bank friends for small business services, their advertisements are amazing. And you don't have to wait for them to pop up. You can go to their website and see their commercials and their areas of focus. There's a lot of cold calling done in very formal ways by the larger banks, the regionals and the national global organizations. I saw a blurb in the Charlotte Business Journal a couple of years ago that in 2012, Bank of America made 300,000 or so cold calls in the Charlotte market in 1 year. And so I asked my smaller bank friends, are you proportionally doing the same sort of thing? Are you cold calling, but are you calling on your existing customers? And I think what we have to do here is to train our staff that calling is important and that our customers are receptive to calling. We hear so much about cross-selling, and I know, honey, when you do teller training and you talk to frontline folks, that a lot of the tellers are reluctant to get involved in cross-sell because they don't think that's what customers want. But, you know, the reality is customers are telling us that they do. Customers tell us overwhelmingly in surveys that they look to bank employees for good information about banking products and services. And, you know, one of my catchphrases, if you hear me speak, and you're about to hear it now, but anytime you hear me speak, I'm going to talk about the importance of knowledgeable, enthusiastic employees in getting our message to our customers. That's just a given. We have to be there. We have to educate them. And if our employees are educated well, then they will do a good job of delivering the message to our customers. What customers are reluctant to have is the sort of cross-selling at a retail store, for example, when you're checking out at 9:30 at night and you have $6 worth of merchandise and the clerk says, because they've been forced to say this, would you like to open one of our store cards and save 5%? We don't want that, but a business that I'm already doing business with, a bank, come in and say, we think we can help you spend less time getting your banking activity done and get it done more accurately, and we'd like to show you some of these tools. Why would they not be receptive to that? Well, we have a lot of work to do within our bank, and that really is a goal that we have to get past. Remote deposit capture, for example, and you know I'm a check processing guy and cut my teeth in that, and I understand the value of remote deposit capture for a business with a lot of checks. But we've had such a hard time as an industry delivering effectively that product to our customers because many of our bankers are scared of it, particularly if you have a loan officer who is your primary calling officer, and we'll beat up on lenders just for a second. Many of them are really concerned about technology. The last thing they want is a technology fail impacting a good lending relationship that they already have. And so they're reluctant to be aggressive about a technology that businesses overwhelmingly tell us, we want this, we'd like to have this, to the point that third parties who sell debit and credit card processing are also now selling this merchant capture technology. And guess what? You just introduced another clearing bank in the background to your business customer instead of you delivering it straight to them without a middleman in the process. So that's a good example. And so I think best practices are this: training and educating our staff, both our calling staff, our frontline staff, those that are normally in customer contact, but also the rest of the bank so that everyone understands the value proposition, and then engaging with our customers in traditional ways, calling on them, hosting meetings, which I think is critically important, hosting meetings in our offices to show them new products and technologies, but more important, to listen to them. And I'd like to come back to those meetings here in a minute. But we also want everybody to be at a high level of awareness about any of our banking products and services so that the non-traditional channels, my neighbor that I see in the driveway every afternoon when we both pull in from work about the same time, asks me a question about a promotional item they saw about remote deposit capture or merchant credit card services. I need a bookkeeper. I need a loan clerk to be knowledgeable enough to say, I think that would help you. I know in your florist shop you get a lot of checks. Come by the bank tomorrow and we'll have somebody talk to you, or I'll have somebody come out and meet with you, whatever's convenient. Everybody's got to have enough knowledge to give that initial positive response about the product. So that's kind of what we're hoping for. And I do want to talk, because I'm on a little bit of a soapbox here these days, about these meetings. We're going to host representatives, hopefully at an accounting level, at an ownership level, from 8 to 10 businesses at a time. Bring them in for breakfast. Nothing else seems to work, frankly, because even the best intentions of coming to a lunch meeting or an after-dinner reception, the press of business gets in the way of that. So we do a lot of breakfast meetings. I've been privileged to host a number of these to kind of moderate them on behalf of the bank. But here's what we essentially are doing: spending a little bit of time talking about the new products and services, and some of them may not be so new, frankly, but about bank products and services that could help them, and then listening to their reaction to that and to other issues. You know, I like this two ears, one mouth ratio. It works really, really well. We need to listen. And here's what I can promise my financial institution clients is that the pain points that these businesses will talk to you about, and they will, it's not necessarily complaining, but they're going to say, you know, we put this internet banking in and we still haven't figured out how to have multiple users set up on it, and they've had it for 6 months or a year. The pain points that they're going to bring out are going to be so easy for you to fix the majority of the time as to be humbling to you that this customer has been suffering through this without it working. And that's the reason we've got to engage. We cannot assume that a quiet customer is a happy customer. We've got to make sure that they are not only downloading our mobile banking app, for example, but they're downloading it and using it. So those are some thoughts about how we should be doing this. And I'll turn it back to you if you have some follow-up. And then I would like to talk a little bit about a very esoteric term that we keep hearing, big data, and how I think we can apply that to what we're doing in the business world.
Do you want to empower yourself with the confidence and skills to excel as a trainer? If you are serious about training, Train the Trainer Bootcamp is for you. Join us February 23rd to February 26th in Houston, Texas, to boost your credibility and speaking skills as a trainer. Train the Trainer Bootcamp is a dynamic four-day workshop every trainer deserves. You'll learn from the nation's best trainers on how to engage your audience and make training stick. Learn more at interaction-training.com. February 23rd to the 26th, 2016. Save the date. Sign up today. Trent, I think this information about packaging and promoting small business services is going to be so well received by our audience. And you mentioned that you had a request. You said, I want to talk about big data and I want to hear about it.
Okay, well, great. I think that this is a term, and you know, you and I have been in this business a number of years, and I think that we heard back in the late 90s a lot of talk around something called marketing CIFs or MCIF technology, and today we keep hearing the buzzword big data, and I've written a couple of articles on that and given some presentations to try to help banks understand it. My goal with any buzzword that comes across from the vendor side is to first understand it, and then secondly, try to translate it into something actionable for the banks. If I can't find a positive, actionable benefit from a product or service like that, then I generally put it on the back of my list rather than something that needs to be looked at carefully. So big data is a very big buzzword today across lots of industries, not just banking. And what I want to try to do is boil that down just quickly here to how banks can do a better job of things or even get started doing some things they're not doing at all around their business customers. I think it's important for us to realize that if we are processing a business's primary checking account, and perhaps we also have a loan with them, and by the way, you need to have both of those things. You need to get that deposit account when you get that loan package. But if you have that information, you know so much more about the day-to-day workings of that business than anyone else who's on the outside looking in could possibly know unless the business tells them. You understand who they are paying and with what regularity and how much, and who's paying them and with what regularity and how much, and you get so much detail from it, and especially if that business, like many are today, if they're making more electronic payments and fewer paper payments, then those electronic transactions are self-defining. They have industry codes associated with them and business names associated with them. And so where big data comes in is to say, let's take all this information we have as a result of processing this business's activity, and let's go through and analyze it. Let's look at average transaction volumes and dollar amounts and concentrations of who they're paying and those types of things, so that we as a bank can say to them, here's what we know about your business. And for this reason, we think that these checks over here that you seem to continue to write for your part-time employees, we think it makes sense for you to go ahead and convert them to electronic payroll deposit as you've done for your full-time employees. And here's the cost basis for that. Again, I think if we look at something like big data, and 20 years ago we looked at MCIF and we said the same thing, this is so complicated, how will we ever get it done? But if we pick one thing that we want to do and execute on it well. I mentioned a minute ago not having the deposit relationship when you've got a commercial loan. Why not? It means that we didn't ask for the business, or if they agreed to it as a part of the loan agreement, we didn't hold them to the fire to say, yes, you've got to move it because you told us you would. Whatever that means, that's a simple thing. Who has loans with us and does not have a deposit account? But beyond that, I want to analyze what that business is doing. And I'll give you a strategic example. I was working with a client in an enterprise strategic planning exercise. One of their stated goals is that they wanted to expand into one of a handful of communities around their existing community. And they were having some difficulty picking which one. And I gave them my spiel about what we know about businesses we're already working with. And I said to them, let's pull the data and figure out what a good customer looks like to you today. In the market that you serve today, what do you consider to be a good business customer? What are those characteristics? And we were able to refine that. We looked at average balances, transaction volume, the opportunity for lending to them, their velocity of money in terms of how they turned over and cash flow. And we identified what we believed to be some significantly positive characteristics of existing customers. And then, with the help of some data that's out there, some analytics that we could find, we figured out in the four communities they were looking at which one of them had the most businesses that also met that profile. And so it became this, from this muddled, which one of these markets do we go to first, it became clear we want to go to this market because of this. So we're a little bit off the path here on a rabbit trail, but I did want to say that big data plays such a big role to us here, and you don't have to go buy new software to do this. You can analyze with your current report writer most of the time the basic transaction activity that these businesses are involved in, and their balances and their other relationship information, you can get access to that pretty easily and begin to see in charts and graphs and numbers what you've never really thought about in a solid way before, in terms of how do we define this business that we say is a good customer. And sometimes, frankly, we find out that because they haven't been willing to pay fees, that maybe we're losing money on this customer. That's a different direction and more to talk about. But I will tell you this, on the consumer side and on the business side, the typical small financial institution has given away so much for so long that now that we need to be charging for it, and we need to be charging for two reasons. One, our net interest margin is changing for the worse. And secondly, when there's value there, we should be able to get paid for delivering value. So there's both of those reasons there. But my point is, we've given away so much for so long that it's going to take a lot of retraining within the bank before we even engage with our customers about the ability to charge for products and services like that. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. And I think this information can just make the difference in success and disappointment for the financial institution that wants to get out there and work the relationships they already have and begin to look for who else looks like my best customer. I thought that was a great point. Do you wrestle with email on a daily basis? What do you do with that endless stream of email? Where do you put it? How do you respond to it? Sign up now for our December 10th quarterly webinar and learn how you can conquer your inbox. Learn more on our website, interaction-training.com. Remember, members of the Training Institute attend the quarterly webinars for free, and you can become a member for just $99 a year. Check it out, thetraininginstitute.com. And begin to enjoy these webinars for free along with many other benefits. Become a member today. Is there more you want to say about why it is so important to package these products and services well? I think you've given us a lot of good insight, but is there anything else you'd add to that?
Well, let me try to put a bow on that package for you, because that has been kind of the topic of our conversation today. The difference that I'm trying to make here, a couple of years ago, a client called me and one of their competitors had started running a billboard advertisement in their community that said free business checking. And the banker called me and he said, I'm concerned. I don't know how we can afford to do that. What I knew, because this guy hadn't been at the bank very long, he was a new president they brought in, but what I was able to say to him is, I don't want you to worry about this because you already have free business checking. You've just been calling it, we don't charge for that. And so that's the gap that I'm trying to bridge here, is promoting something as free business checking or never charging for something and not telling the customer what the value of it is. The second part that I understood, because I knew the bank that was running this campaign, I knew what they were doing in other markets. The second thing that I understood is that it really wasn't free business checking. There were lots of strings attached to it that we had to be able to acknowledge and talk to our customers about. Well, yeah, you could go get that free business checking, but they're going to limit you to X number of transactions a month, or they're going to force you to pay this fee or do this if you fall outside their parameters. So the packaging and promoting is about not being outsold. The given here is that you've got all the products and services that any other financial institution can also offer. It's the process of putting them together and suggesting to your customers, we think this is what's best for you, and the impact that that has. If I send you a letter, honey, and I say, here's 15 different presentations, pick one, and I'd like to do this presentation for you, that's a different thing than me writing you a letter and saying, based on what I heard you talking about last week on your podcast, here's some work that I'm doing that's very specific to that, that I think would really benefit your business. That's a better way for me to approach you. And what I'm asking our banks to do is to approach their businesses in a way that honors the relationship and shows that business that we're trying to help you get better, and we've got the products and services to do it. So those are my thoughts around that packaging and promoting, and that's where that phrase really came from.
Well, I like the phrase. I love the information you've shared with us. I'm sure down the road we'll have an opportunity to see each other again, maybe do something together, and ask you to come back and be a guest on Training Matters. Thanks so much, Trent. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well. My privilege and to be with you, and look forward to another opportunity. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton.